Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 1st of October 2015. Michael, it's October 2015 already. Broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting the station of freedom. We're coming to you today from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, where we say heresy is only another word for freedom of thought. And here from Houston, Texas, is a great freaky unteacher of the gospel, the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Michael, how are you?
Ferris Bartlett, I am doing good today. Thank you. And how did we get here anyway?
Get where?
That's just the place I'm at right now. I look around and I see the way life used to be. The Christianity that I used to embrace, the gospel that has grown and expanded over these last three decades, and it's like I see it all, but I still wonder, how did we get here?
We got here the same way that you eat the elephant. That's how we got here.
Yes, exactly. I have dearly loved this process. We got here by saying, I don't know. You know, what most people do is they find out something different and build a church around it, build a religion around it. Instead of trying to force people's questions to fit our doctrine, whenever it doesn't fit, we've said, I don't know. Ferris, there's something so powerful about I don't know. Oh, my gosh.
And, of course, once you set yourself up on a pedestal, let's take John Hagee, for example, with this bloody stupid blue moon.
His reinforced.
Blood moons.
Yeah.
Only in Texas do they grow them.
Oh, it's the end of the world on the 28th. Did we get by it?
No, I think that I've got to trust John Hagee. So, obviously, the end of the world came and...
I thought you had left.
I have. I'm speaking to you from another world than you have been.
Oh, no, not left behind.
Left behind.
Again.
We're still here. This is actually about my, oh gosh, I don't know, it could be about my seventh or eighth end of the world that I've actually, I mean, talk about evolution, talk about survival of the fittest, man, you and I are there.
This is true, and had we been more astute and listened to more lunatics around the world, we could have added probably another 25 end of the worlds to this.
Oh, mate, what a great week. It's been a terrific week. I've been as busy as a dog in a room full of rubber balls, mate. I think I'm losing my mind, but as long as I can keep that part that tells me when I need coffee, I'll probably be okay. Mate, we're not going to get to the end today. We just ain't. We've got so much to catch up on.
Boy, we do.
In a packed program of propitious proportions and poetic principles, we have everything from politicians who don't know God from a G-string, preacher pimps who are fleecing the sheep in the name of prophecy, a bunch of email correspondence from our producers, executive producers, official sponsors, and gospel revolutionaries all around the world. Mike, you know, we ain't going to get to our chosen topic today. That was Anomianism, with all this good stuff to get to here.
Well, you know, whatever happens, we always have a good time. I've missed you. Goodness gracious, I've had to bow out, and here we are again, back with our regular programming.
I don't mind the holiday. I don't mind just taking a week off, but I'd much rather this. This is a much... Hey, a shout-out to our Gainesville, Georgia friends.
Oh, my, yes. Thank you guys so much. Now, either everybody has been really, really, really nice, and everybody has been very supportive, or Jeff and Barris just hasn't let me know the bad news yet. So I am under the impression that everybody's been very kind. I would be under that impression because I know the people who worked so hard to put this all together, and I would not be surprised that they've been gracious about it. But thank you guys so very much. Goodness, it was not a comfortable decision to have to make. I remember Barris having sciatica and back pain years ago, and standing there in such screaming pain. And I thought about the the meeting we did in Canada just this last time when you were there and I stood up and croaked out. But none of those situations were going to cause someone else to get sick. This time, this is something that I had that was contagious. And I know the group down there, they're huggy patty, huggy people. So if they could have put me behind a plexiglass plate or something to where I wouldn't have had to come in contact with anybody, I'm sure I could have taken enough drugs to make it through an hour. I'm so grateful to you guys, and we want to get this rescheduled again as soon as possible because I want to go back to Georgia. I got Georgia, on my mind.
Georgia. No peace, no peace I find. I say just an old sweet song.
And also those that are in charge of this, let's really do go ahead and get this date set up again. Call Jeff and call me also. Do either one, and we can get this all wrapped up and get the job done again. I do apologize for this inconvenience in so many ways. And also, I would like to say thank you to those that have made the plans for the trips and had to postpone that. Maybe some of you had hotel arrangements. Some of you probably even booked vacation time for this. I really, really apologize for any inconvenience that this caused. We love you, and I wouldn't miss a chance to be with you. You know that. But this was one of those things that we just didn't have the say-so over. Was not going to come and make. This was so severe. I lost 12 pounds, Barris.
That's a good sized baby.
I lost 12 pounds.
Now, Mike, we've got some great news this week. We have, by the time this goes to air, I'm gonna guess that all of our official sponsors, all of our producers, all of our executive producers will have received their certificates. They all went out. I think they're all going out this week.
Oh, wonderful. We appreciate you guys. Goodness gracious. We may have a small support base, but it is a grand support base. These guys are extremely loyal. We've got some people that's done this for 30 years, and we really appreciate you guys and all the ones who have recently come on board. It makes all of a world of difference. And we're going to have some new updates for you for Kenya and around the world. Things are really, really heating up around the planet with the Gospel Revolution. So stay tuned. And thank you. You're the ones making it happen.
Now let's hear from Gospel Revolutionary Apprentice Adrienne Billing. Again, Billings.
Oh, wonderful. I love what we're getting from her.
Yeah, well, it used to be the Dannys who were dropping in on us. But now
it's the Adriannas.
It is. Well, we've got somebody else with an A name today, so I'm just guessing that we've been deserted by the Dannys and we've been grabbed at by the how do you stutter with an A?
I'd stick with a D.
In fact, let's upgrade Adrienne Billings today on the show. Let's upgrade her from apprentice GR to full GR, Gospel Revolutionary.
Exactly.
We only nominated her as an apprentice because we hadn't heard from her before lately. So she says to Mike Williams, subject Second Coming. So in the midst of all the topics of his second coming and being born again, which many quote verses from the Bible to make their stands, my understanding is Christ came the first time to earth, made lower than the angels, and fulfilled all that was to be done. The second coming he came into was his kingdom with all of his glory. Now, those that were dead when he died were raised up, and those who were alive were caught up with him. Both groups were born again. Now, all after the cross will never be or need to be born again, for we were born into his kingdom. So Being born again was only for those before the cross, as they were born into... Oh, Adrian.
Listen to this girl.
Yeah. So being born again was only for those before the cross, as they were born in sin, and those that died, died in sin. But all who are born after the cross have been born new creations. I see now that some of Paul's teachings aren't for those of us after the cross, such as he said, once you were in sin, but now made righteous through him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all after the cross will never be or need to be born again, for we were born into his kingdom. So being born again was only for those before the cross, as they were born into sin. And those that died, died in sin. But all who are born after the cross have been born new creations. I see now that some of Paul's teachings aren't for those of us after the cross, such as he said, once you were in sin, but now made righteous through him. He must have been talking to them that were alive before and after Christ, because all of us born after his finished work and not before then were never in sin.
Excellent.
Listen to this girl.
Mm-hmm.
So a born again Christian is one who was born righteous and holy and was deceived and born into lies. Thank God that what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. The lie that we were once sinners keeps our mind bound to the old covenant. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
It was true for them in Paul's day because they were in the old and needed to know they have come into the new. Love you, Adriana. Dad, Adrian, you can't just reel out that it's like Encyclopedia Britannica and say, love you. No, you don't love us. Someone who loves us would stroke all our feathers the right way. You're not doing that. You are coming up with such wonderful new stuff.
Yeah, this is beautiful. This is the natural conclusions of the gospel that bring you to these things that we really don't have to teach this part. I don't ever remember teaching this part.
I don't remember anyone else saying this.
Well, now, we've had it come up in questions. We've had it come up in discussion. We've affirmed before that what Adriana is saying now is true, but we've never taught it. We've never had to teach it.
Where'd she get it from?
It's called the great teacher in her.
Well, what gives her the right to, yeah, I mean, you're the boss. You should be doing this stuff. And what have you been doing sitting on your hands in the back seat?
Exactly. Waiting for Adriana to get here is what I've been doing.
Apparently.
But all of these conclusions are very, very true. And of course, Jesus came into his kingdom in the resurrection. So that, again, would be the second coming. And Hebrews teaches us very clearly that Jesus would return the second time without sin unto salvation. So if that's yet to come, then salvation is not available yet. And sin is still abounds, and Jesus didn't do away with sin. But Hebrews says that his second coming would be without sin unto salvation. What a power. I remember when my eyes rolled over that the first time with the shutters open instead of closed, and I about freaked out. It was kind of like the same thing with Hebrews, where it says that Jesus died for the transgressions that were under the first testament. That was the same way. It was like, my gosh, this dividing line, Christianity puts the dividing line between my bad deeds and then, of course, the new life that comes, that is all saturated with nothing but good deeds, if I'm a good Christian. But that's not what the gospel puts the dividing line. The dividing line is, as Adriana has said, is at the cross. And generations before were one thing, and generations after are another thing. This is the stuff the future is made of, Paris. We're looking for the manifestation of the kingdom of God in this planet. It's already here, but this is how it's made manifest, is through understanding.
All of our lives, we've been trying to grasp at a fog.
Yes.
It's like you take a handful of fog and you open your hand and ain't nothing there. And it seems to me that it's only as the truth of this gospel has soaked into us and we've assimilated it and it has become part of us just as much as God is a part of us, that these things now become easy to see. A lot of our people, Mike, they say, why can't Christians see what we're saying? maybe that's a reason. It's a process.
It is a process. And as long as you're getting validation from a group of people, you'll never find the validation that comes through the gospel. Jesus explained it. He said, you get your honor from men.
Oh.
Therefore, you'll never be able to get the honor that comes from God only.
Oh, wow.
We humans need validation, Paris. But where we get it from, the one who validates us and we accept their validation, that's the person that has the most influence over our life, is the one who validates us. Gosh, we can receive emails like this all day long and enjoy it forever. So, Adriana, thank you, hon. Thank you for being a part of the Gospel Revolution. You are an integral part of it. You have, goodness, I think we thought you were an apprentice, but I don't think you ever were an apprentice to this.
I reckon.
It seems like that you kind of jumped into the deep end of the pool all at once. And thank you. Share more with us. We're learning from you. We appreciate you.
From Elberton, Georgia.
Georgia.
Comes this story, Michael.
Elberton. I've never heard of Elberton.
Elberton, Georgia.
Michael.
Well, it might not be Georgia. It's GA. Maybe it's Elberton, Gainesville.
Well, Gainesville is Georgia, you know.
Oh, that's right, yes. So from Elberton, Georgia. Do you know why Georgia is named Georgia?
Yes, I do.
Tell me why.
It's named after King George.
What distinguishes it as a state of the U.S.?
Their accent.
There's several accents, you mean. No, that's not it.
They have a bunch of them there. Inform us.
Informants?
No, inform us.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were telling us that's where all the WITSEC people go. Okay. Georgia was indeed named after King George, and it was where all of the convicts were sent prior to Australia. So all of you Americans who say, oh, convict settlement Australia is, just remember, you got there first. And after you, well, I'm not going to do anything to dissuade you from that dream. But anyway, so you were settled also by convicts, but after you won the war of rebellion, or you know it better as the war of independence, we were the next best thing. So we got all of those great people that you missed out on. Aren't you sorry? The Athens Banner-Herald reported Friday that Union Grove Baptist Church, sounds so sweet, doesn't it? Union Grove Baptist Church. Where do you go to church? I go to Union Grove Baptist Church. I mean, it just sounds so sweet.
No, that's not how you say it in Athens.
How do you say it?
We go to Union Grove Baptist Church. That's Paula. Athens. You Paula. Just described South Georgia.
Oh, Paula Dean, Athens, I love you.
Athens is where the Southern Bales live. And even the men there sound like Southern Bales.
Okay.
And they are proud of it, too.
All right. Well, anyway.
Now that we've lost all support from Georgia.
they're going to start giving
Georgia.
Oh, boy. Union Grove Baptist Church of Elberton said Janora H. Biggs. Janora H. Biggs was displaying conduct detrimental to the congregation. Yeah, you're going to love this story. The woman has been a church member for 92 years. She's 103, by the way. Damn, she got there late. She got there when she was only 9 years old. Why wasn't she born there? But disagreed with its pastor, Timothy Mattox, about worship practices that include laying hands on members. Every time you shake the pastor's hand, you'd be laying hands with you. Biggs, a retired teacher, said such activities aren't Baptist, but were introduced at the church by Maddox, one of her former students. She taught this to dude.
And probably his father.
Yeah, probably. He is a holy sanctified minister, or so he says. We voted him in and we didn't know it was what we were getting until he was there. We're Baptists.
Yeah.
And we want to stay that way, Biggs said.
And, you know, she is right. This is very new for the Baptists. They've, I think after the charismatic movement started, you remember, well, I just here in the U.S., I remember very well the Baptist churches that I was involved in, and there was absolute wall of separation about the Age of Miracles. They'd passed. The fact that you lay hands on sick people and all of that and do anything but pray, God help them through it. That was witchcraft and sorcery to the Baptist Church. But they found out that's where the money's going, so we better get them.
Mate, that's true. I remember a few years before I left Australia, there were two Baptist churches. I think it was Gateway Baptist in Brisbane and Paradise Baptist in, could it be Melbourne or Adelaide? And
Gateway to Paradise Baptist Church.
From Athens, Georgia.
Gateway and Paradise.
I mean, how do you lose with names like that? They were the biggest Baptist churches in Australia. They were both charismatic. Now,
is that right? Wow.
Why didn't the Baptist Union, it's in Australia, it's called the Baptist Union, and we only have one Baptist church in Australia, not like you guys do. You've got multiple options. But why did the Baptist Union take no action to either kick them out or to correct them?
Yeah.
Because they were the biggest churches and hence the biggest incomes to the Baptist Union. And of course, once you turn charismatic, you start then to get into this, the prosperity thing, the seed, plant your seed and you'll get more back. So not only were they the biggest givers, in Australian, Baptist parlance, but they were the biggest per individual givers. So it's pretty funny. Statement from the Union Grove Church said, fellow members decided to remove Biggs. Now, we both know how much BS that is because fellow members would have been lent on by this the guy at the top. Also banned from the church was Biggs' grandson, Elliot Dye, a member for 30 years, and Kevin Ham, an ordained minister who was also a member of the church. 103-year-old woman kicked out of a church for disagreeing with a pastor, and she was apparently, I read on one blog, she was a foundation member of the church.
Yeah.
What's at work here, Michael?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you got a 93-year-old speaking her mind. That's just not acceptable. You just can't do that. You know, it's when I hear these things, Ferris, it is it jars me again and again and again that the fact that you disagree with somebody means you cannot associate with them. It's created 40,000, way more than 40,000 denominations in the world just in Christianity. But the watching Baptist churches turn charismatic. See, back in your and I days, we remember when there was the Catholic charismatic movement, the Baptist charismatic movement. Each of these churches, we started getting them to speak in tongues and lay hands on people. And they were resisted and rejected by their congregations. Now for this entire flip-flop to have taken place over the last 30 years to where that now a Baptist church is kicking a member out because they are sticking to what was originally Baptist doctrine of that the Age of Miracles had ceased and passed. But the bottom line is it's where the money is. It's just where the money is. But the heart and soul of a pastor who would do anything with a 93-year-old as far as consequences for her disagreement with him, I don't know how much threat she could pose to him.
Well, apparently enough that he is running scared of a 103-year-old founding member grandma.
Yes.
And that would, for me, that would have to have him nominated as a bonehead of the day and as a gutless wonder.
Bonehead of the day.
I do believe that. I think if I had his position, I would at least use the wisdom. At 103, you know the end is near. It's past. Why not just say, honey, let's talk about this tomorrow? Because
Yeah.
I hear you, and I appreciate. Let me take this to prayer for a month. Hey, the odds are in your favor that she ain't going to be around, but to take this decisive action in this case like this, even if he were right with a 103-year-old, I think I said 93-year-old earlier, but oh my goodness. I, what do you say?
Lies are nice, lies are nice. Every Sunday you cheat me. Far too smart to have a heart. You look happy to please me. Religion so faint you can smell the scent of your fermenting krautkraut. Your dogma sucks, and that's the crux of my contempt for your guilt trap. Religion is better than yours, and we have more cash to prove it. We the sheeple, we love our steeple, and logic will never remove it. Our pastor perfectly hears from God, and he said you were sinful. Fact that we make no sense at all proves that we're the Lord's people.
All they care about is getting money, 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 money. Even retail stores give people more respect than that. I don't understand why we've become so commercialized with religion. What does this have to do with God?
Now, a couple of times you've accused me of being Glenn Klein reincarnated.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm not going to go into the details as to why. Well, you're such a wonderful person, Beerus. That's
how's Glenn going, mate?
Well, yeah, goodness gracious. Of course, I love joking with and about Glenn. As Glenn has been such a powerful part of the gospel revolution and still is. I got a call from Glenn this last week, and things have been going much better for Glenn. He's landing some contracts with his expertise, and then it seemed like out of the blue, I don't even know the process. We talked for a while about it, but he told me he was moving to Wisconsin and that he was packing up the condo as we spoke.
And hang on, Wisconsin, that's his original stamping ground, isn't it?
That's where he is from, yes. And he has become the midday radio announcer for a radio station in Racine, Wisconsin.
All right.
And, yeah. And he sent me the link. I got to hear the person that Glenn was replacing. And gosh, Glenn was very gracious and, you know, acknowledged the man, acknowledged his listeners, and said he could only hope to ever have the respect and the admiration that his predecessor had. And
wow,
it was very good. Very.
Hey, so he's doing well. He's on top. That's so good.
Well, he's headed there. I could hear Glenn say he's not on top yet, but he is definitely headed that direction.
Oh, wow.
And there's I don't know of anybody that just ought to be a radio man other than Glenn Klein.
Oh, man. No, this man was, he was born for radio.
He really was. And I'm and now to do the full circle back to Wisconsin, you know, all of our best hopes and wishes are with you, Glenn Klein. And we love you to pieces and really, really are glad that things have made a very wonderful and powerful turn for you. We're very happy.
What he said, Glenn. Mike, this week we heard from Gospel Revolutionary. This is our second person after Adrienne. We don't hear from those Dannys anymore. What is it? Did we upset them? Did, like, oh, maybe they were put off by our humour. But from London, Ontario, Canada says this. Hello, Mike. I'm back. Yep. I don't care how you start off an email. That's always great.
That's a good one, yes.
I've been having difficulty accepting my redemption because of this schizophrenia. Mm. All I know is I want what I had with God from the beginning, before I became ill. I was so content and at peace. Since you preach what I had first believed, I will follow your ministry. Grace is a powerful message, and therefore what better way to clear my mind and know my oneness with God? The Holy Spirit revealed to me what he's clearly taught you. Doctors don't know what causes schizophrenia, and I'm not sure why I became ill. I just felt strange and became angry with God because this was happening to me. He did nothing to stop it. Oh boy, have I been there. So I doubted his existence and convinced myself that God wasn't real. I believed in Jesus because of the prayer I said all those 21 years ago and felt the incredible love like nothing I ever experienced before. I want that again. I don't know how, but I hope to feel that love again. I need to, because life is just too dead and boring without it. Look forward to hearing from your newsletters. I'm going to stay this time. Say a prayer for me, please.
Thank you so much, sweetheart. Our hearts are with you in every way possible. And we support you. We're here. And there's hardly a person that I know that has come through the Gospel Revolution that hasn't had some form of challenges with depression or many diagnosable conditions, mental and emotional conditions.
Michael, is that because when you come out of Christianity is lifting up this or holding out this example of how to be right with God or happy, have God happy with you or have us happy with you or be somehow successful, and it's totally impossible to attain, and this leads to depression? Is am I overthinking this?
No, not at all. I don't know that we could say that that's what causes it, but it certainly doesn't help it. That is for sure. And any mental or emotional disorder that a person has, I will guarantee you that Christianity will compound that. Now, one of the things, Barris, that's very interesting about the situation with schizophrenia, the very essence of it causes you to withdraw and cease communication and develop an alternate reality for your life. But look what she's done here. She has reached out. She has articulated as well as anyone can her situation. This is not a depart from reality. So, you know, Cherie, hun, this fact that you sent this email is an indication to me that the gospel is already having an effect on this area of your life, as I think it does on everyone. We don't go around talking about people being cured of anything. But what the gospel does is wherever you are in life, whatever mental or emotional state that you're in, financial or anything else, it simply gives us better tools to mental and emotional tools to deal with these things. Now, in the fact that schizophrenia and many of the mental disorders are the onset of feelings of being completely out of control of your life and sense of failure, the terrible thing about Christianity is it comes with a built-in sense of failure for the masses.
Say that again.
Christianity comes with a built-in sense of failure.
Are you saying it's an inevitable built-in sense of failure?
Unless you get to the top and stay there. But even what if you do get to the top? What if you do get to the top? Then you live in a more private hell about your failures. I remember transitioning from the pew sitter who went up in every altar call to the pastor who was behind the pulpit who couldn't go up in the altar calls anymore.
Michael, I'm sorry, you're wrong.
Correct me, wise one.
Well, it's a good segue. By the way,
thank you so much for having the courage to send us that email.
What a courageous thing. Thank you.
That took guts. Oh, gosh. Well, okay, so here's a good example, and that's our Bonehead of the Year. Now, we've had many boneheads on this show, and we have Jeff Robertson's cousin. I think it's his first cousin, isn't it? Pat. We do have an acknowledged grand poobah of boneheadism. He will never be surpassed in our opinion, and that's why...
And always with fresh material, too.
Damn, never runs out, does he? No, the patron saint of boneheads, of course, is Jeff Robertson's first, or is it second cousin, Pat Robertson. But the Bonehead of the Year, and every year we have a Bonehead of the Year award, the Bonehead of the Year, of course, is our dear friend, John Hagee. Now, John Hagee, I see that you sent me this, and it is an offering from John Hagee that he sent you, apparently. You must be good buddies with him. And it says, have you ordered your rapture-ready underwear? You cannot enter the presence of the Lord without underwear on. Exodus 20, verse 26.
Oh, Lord.
Remember, the rapture will take place on September 28, 2015, according to John Hagee's book, Four Blood Moons. Yeah, and you can apparently, I'm just having a look at the picture of this underwear. There's a full picture of him right where, well, I don't know what to say. It's on the front of this underwear. And you sent this to me.
I forwarded it to you, I think.
You did, yeah.
I'm not sure it was for public consumption, though.
It is now.
Yeah, that's the danger. Listen, that's the danger of sharing anything with Barris Bartlett. He is the only finger on the button unless we get Jeff to intervene. So.
No, Jeff won't intervene, mate. This is his first cousin. Pat Robertson. Oh, no. It must be probably a further, I'm sorry, it's John Hagee. Let me say, probably his fourth or fifth cousin, I'd say. That Jeffrey, he's a suspect one, mate. Not as suspect as Victor Brennan. Now, there's one suspect person. We'll come to him in a minute. But family, look, I've told you this before, and I'm going to tell you again, and this is my seventh or eighth bloody rapture. So, here's what you need to do. Write a letter. Do you want to have some fun? I'm going to tell you, this is so fun. Write them a letter. Ask these boneheads to sign all their assets over to you, dated one day after their suggested rapture date. And then what we'll do is we'll quote your letter and we'll quote their response. And I'll guarantee you one thing, there'll be no bloody responses. None of them have got the guts to stand up for what they believe in. So, mate, that was where ended up taking us. I don't know why, but I think it was something you said.
Blame it on me.
Okay. This week, also, we heard from executive producer Jeffrey Robertson. Now, Jeffrey wrote me and said, I was in a private internet chat. Hey, listen, hang on. This is a pledge month, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Oh, okay. We'll be hearing more from Jeffrey. I was in a private internet chat with Miss Cherry Cadle.
It's not private anymore.
You know that, you tell me, that's gone.
It got to Barris.
I told her how amazed I was by her ability to reach people with the gospel. Here is her reply. Thank you. It gives me a sense of power and a mindset that I am already successful. Mm. I get to begin from the finish line of Jesus.
This is beautiful.
I want to say that again.
Do it again.
It gives me a sense of power and a mindset that I am already successful. I get to begin from the finish line of Jesus. Sometimes, when I do meditate on the reality of being one with God, it is too much for my mind to comprehend. Jeff goes on and says, her words were so powerful because she put into words the power, love and freedom that comes from a heart set free with the truth the gospel speaks, teaches, reveals. And I asked her if we may quote her on that, and her answer was sure. Wow.
Absolutely. Well, it's Ladies Day on the Gospel Revolution PowerCast. I tell you, our girls out there are that our girls out there don't stand behind and wait to see what the men are going to do. Our gospel revolutionary women, man, I'm telling you, they're a strong bunch, and they have some incredible insights, and we're very, very grateful for all of them.
This week, Michael, we heard from gospel revolutionary Jody Leese. I hope I'm saying that right, Jody. He wrote, "Hey guys, just finished listening to your last two PowerCasts, and I had to send you a song off my son's band's new and unreleased album. I hope you like it. It fits with the podcast and your message in general." He sent me some details and explained that his son did a lot of the work on the album. It was really good. I'm going to give you the link. Go to YouTube and listen to Stained Glass Army. The new band name is Excuses. Go have a listen to the music. It's great music. Thoroughly recommend that you have a listen to it. And thank you, Jody. That's good. And one of the reasons I put this away was Jody Leese has after his name, he says PhD in freedom. This week we also heard from gospel revolutionary Steve Davis, and he wrote this: "Does the gospel revolution agree with the statement where God guides, God provides? I ask this because in the last PowerCast there was a mention about miracles ceasing. The evidence given for that was that there is no 100% reproducible results. I find that extremely interesting while considering some of the other PowerCasts I've heard, specifically the teaching regarding God changing. For example, God does not fall back over or does not do the same thing the same way twice. If that is God's way, then how can any human be expected to find any way to reproduce miracles of God using the same methods over and over? In fact, trying to get results by your deeds is religion 101.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, it seems reasonable to me that miracles cannot be expected to be performed by people like this. But this isn't my original question. I offer it only to let you know where I'm coming from with this. I've seen time and again reason to trust in God to provide for us in every way. I am always amazed that we always have just what we need when we need it. No matter how impossible it seemed due to finances, etc., we have choices to do or not to do. We can also stress out or not stress out. While our Father doesn't seem to do anything the same way every time, there appears to be a consistency to Him based in His character of divine love and grace. And it seems very gospel to experience such things on earth, not just within our souls. In other words, sometimes temporal things work out in unexplained ways rather than us running out of money and living on the streets while keeping a great attitude about it. Although there may be grace in such an experience too, I just haven't had that experience yet. Paul said he found a way to be content in every circumstance. While that can be attributed to a soul at rest, is it also possible that he expected the Holy Spirit to be actively involved in ways that are not possible to explain? Otherwise, if it were all up to us to get through this life without the divine power of God, then we should be careful not to take too many risks. Again, though, Paul is a great example of a person who took risk after risk. I doubt he always had a death wish, at least most of the time, because he seemed too hopeful and positive, and he is a man who knew the gospel well. Therefore, it seems reasonable for me to conclude, given the evidence and the fact that Paul knew the gospel so well, he somehow expected that the good news also implied that where our heart guides, God provides, or in other words, where God guides, God provides. What do you guys think about this? The only answer I'm going to have for that is, wow, the number of times I heard that back in the day.
Mm-hmm. It was almost cliche.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Here's the real crux of the matter, and I think the thing that Steve is trying to resolve in his own self, which that's where we have to resolve these things. And where you come down on this issue is not something that we're going to correct or say, you know, no, that's not right. But the only thing that we can do is share those things which cross the border of that God and man are one, and that there's God out there ain't out there, that He's in here. the assumption that we do anything without the influence of God. And that includes atheists. That includes people that don't do anything according to the gospel. God is in them.
So what you're saying is, at the heart of ourselves is the fact that God and us are so inextricably woven together that we can't pick the difference.
Exactly.
Okay.
And it'd be very foolish to try. You know, the several years ago, the thing that settled in my heart and mind was the miracle of one more step. You know, you don't have to have divine influence for things to work out. Just put one foot in front of the other. Something's going to happen. Motion causes things to happen.
And back in the day, we would have said that whatever happened was God.
There is also that one, that it was God, or it would have happened if, no, that was the devil. That's the big division that came for me. When I was a Baptist, everything was God. And that's another thing that's changed about the Baptist Church. Baptist Church used to teach that every single thing that happens in your life is God's will. And they don't teach that anymore. They've jumped on the charismatic bandwagon on that one.
Now, Steve says, if it was all up to us to get through this life without the divine power of God, then we should be careful not to take too many risks.
But see, to me, how do you make it through this life without God when he lives in you?
Well, hold tight. The next statement he makes is, Paul is a great example of a person who took risk after risk. I doubt he had a death wish. Now, we know that Paul, when he went to Jerusalem, was confronted by, was it Agabus? A prophet who said, who tied himself up and said, this is what's going to happen here if you go to Rome. There's no inference that this prophet was, you know, was a dope or a plant or anything. But Paul did it anyway, so, I mean, if that's not taking a risk, what is?
Well, that's true. But remember, in the story, Paul didn't go because he knew that God, where God guides, he provides. Paul accepted the fact that he could be killed on this trip.
But couldn't that be God's provision?
Death could be a real wonderful provision if you are suffering with a disease, but I would not call a provision of death when you're out trying to accomplish something. I don't think that would be a provision.
But it would be a vision.
It would be something that we would add to it for sure.
Are you saying that this, where God guides, God provides, are you saying that you don't believe that?
It is not a spiritual truth. That it just is. I do not see it as a spiritual truth at all. If God is guiding our life, you're not free. You are not free. You cannot say you're free and God guides me all at the same time.
But can't I want to submit myself to the higher power?
You don't have to submit yourself to the higher power. The higher power is in you. It's not an issue of submitting or not submitting.
Back in the day, we used to say, God, please use me. Please take my body and use me. My heart, my soul, my body, they're all yours. Please use me. Now, we'd say that to our Heavenly Father. But if we were to say that to an earthly father, it'd be some kind of sick, crazy.
That would be some kind of sick, brother. Yeah, I know it would be sick. And it wouldn't be what a real father would want. And he would not count that as being a successful son in his eyes. I'm not sure which series it was in, but a couple of years ago I did one session to where that I went into great detail about this. And see, it's like when God guides, that's to assume that we are under guidance. Now, if you're under guidance, what happens if you don't follow the guidance? Do you not get provision?
Then you reverse engineer it, work it backwards and say, well, if I ran out of provision, obviously I was out of God's will.
Oh, my bears, we're bringing up stuff that I am so glad I am freed from the mental illness of that. It sounds comforting. It sounds like it would be right to say where God guides, God provides. But when you begin to examine all of the potential outcomes of this, it just cannot lead to any place else other than guilt and condemnation. unless you know for sure that when God guides, you are listening real well. And does he guide by his speaking to you? Does he guide by fleeces? Does he guide by hints, nudges? Is God out there creating things for you, just for your path in particular? My understanding of the gospel, which is still in the process of growing and understanding, is freedom, that we are free, God living in us, and it is our mind that and our brain and our resources enforced by God that we make decisions. This meeting in Canada I was referring to, my first statement of that session, I never will forget it, I got the biggest round of nervous laughter I've ever heard in a congregation. And I told them, I said, you know, I said, I have news for you. God has no purpose for your life. And then came the nervous, And to me, it was one of the grandest moments of the time that I'd been teaching, because it is when you address these statements that we finally are able to re-examine this. And God provided at the cross. That is the emphatic position of the gospel revolution. This has nothing to do with God providing today. This is now God and man together working as one, not us setting back in subservient position to allow something else to take control over our lives. This was so you could have control over your life. This was so that you could make your decision. You make a plan. You plot a destiny for your life. It is all within your power. And to do anything less than, I believe, is an insult to the grace of God.
Steve, we really enjoy this question because it is very well thought out, and it's your reasoning is excellent. I would love to pursue this question further. I'm sure you would, Mike. And so,
yes.
So please rewrite us and let us know where we are in this whole conversation, because I would like to pursue this further.
And the other thing I would like to say to Steve is, don't change your position on this simply because you heard someone disagree with you. I never change my mind because somebody disagrees.
You're wrong. I'm telling you right
and
now.
And I still haven't changed my mind.
No, that's invincible ignorance in my book.
Well, I've been called worse, that's for sure. But the thing we don't want you to do is, just like people that still feel they need to confess their sins, people who still need a prayer life in the traditional sense that Christianity teaches, people who still need to go take communion at the Catholic Church, go to confession, whatever you feel you need to hang on to for your sanity and stability. Folks, being totally free is scary.
Oh, boy.
It really is a very frightening thing for a human being to be totally free. We want somebody else to be responsible for our
lives. Don't we, though? I mean, I know I do.
Oh, absolutely. God forbid that I have to take the responsibility for all of my decisions. I don't have God to blame. I don't have the devil to blame. I blame Barris all the time because he really is
that's easy.
Most of my problems. And
Okay, that's enough. I've got the no. I have the big red button, and I'm just going to use it now.
I like to hear what you've cut out at the end.
A couple of weeks, and a lot of this news is a couple of weeks old because we just ran something different while Michael was incapacitated. But also in this genre is that Rick Perry dropped out of the presidential race, apparently because Jesus told him to.
Really? I didn't hear that one.
Yeah. And I'm wondering this. Was Jesus so blindsided that he told Rick Perry to get into the race and then had to tell him to get out of the race?
Yeah, and you know, we would be talking about this whether it was a Democrat, Republican, or Independent.
Oh, this has got nothing to do with politics. This has got to do with the craziness of Christianity.
Yeah, it does whack out your brain. My goodness, wow. You know, and there's so many wonderful people whose minds have been paralyzed by Christianity. The ability to move forward really is when we shake off the shackles of religion. And in our case, Barris, we are dealing with Christianity. That's why it is our subject that we address more often than we do Buddhism or Islam or any of the others. But we've experienced the paralysis of the mind and the soul in the doctrines that we embraced in Christianity. And we've also experienced the incredible freedom that comes with when the gospel gets its roots in us. It is a wonderful, wonderful freedom. That is for sure.
Now let's talk for a moment, Michael, about this whole blood moons ludicrousy.
Jeff just did a real good video on that last week too.
Oh man, he's putting out, I'll tell you what, I don't remember when Jeff started, but I remember that you and I both had some input to the fact that he did his videos, and I just think that this guy's doing, Jeff Robertson, is doing some of the best work that we've seen in the gospel revolution. I just think it's excellent.
It is.
Here's a story from the heraldsun.com.au. NASA, NASA, the American Space Organization, refutes Christian claims that the blood moon on September 28 will cause the end of the world. Now, we could play you the tape of this, but suffice to say that this has been championed by two people, a Messianic Jew and also, or actually, I think he's not actually even Messianic Jew. And also a Christian pulpit pimp by the name of John Hagee. And these guys have made quite a deal of money out of their books that they've sold, encouraging this kind of brain-chained dumb beliefs. We even had John Hagee on this show, not John himself, but a tape of John. We had him saying that that this was, you know, the real deal. And then we had a scientist saying, well, tell me how come if this was relative to Israel, why the blood moons could not even be seen over Israel. I'd like to say this is foolishness. I'd like to say it's craziness and boneheadedness. But in fact, what it really is an attempt to make money out of the ignorant.
Yeah, boy, that is for sure. And it seems deliberate. I just don't see how, when somebody's done this time after time after time, how that it could be construed to be any other intent other than just money.
And you're right. John Hagee has done this time after time after time. Michael, this week we are able to put to air a book review that was not, seek it out. It just happened. Mm-hmm. And
we just happened to find it, actually.
Yeah, thank God for Jeff Robertson is all I can say. I don't care who his first or second cousins are. This man is good. This was written, I think, in goodreads.com. And it's written by another author, somebody who has been in Christianity all his life and who has written detective novels and been quite successful in his own way. He says, Mike, and I'm going to read the whole thing. It's going to take a little time, but it's really worth hearing. You know, family, at the end of the show, I've taken to pushing a couple of books. I'd push more, but I just don't have the okay from the authors to do so. Steve Essery, if you're listening, I want to start pushing your book as well. But we push a couple or three books of people who are very loyal to us and they just, everything they write makes sense. One is Mike's book, One, The Gospel According to Mike. One is Redemption.
And a Declaration for All not a choice review.
By Robert Hines. And the other is The Letters of Minniminicky, Touching Spirit by?
That is our friend Pep Washburn. Wonderful book. Goodness gracious. He's outselling me.
I asked Sheridan yesterday, had she read it? And she said no. And I said to Laura, buy it for her.
Yeah.
She needs to read this. She needs to have all this. In this book review, it was about Mike Williams' book One, The Gospel According to Mike. The reviewer says, it is more than just another deconstructionist or revisionist riff on the Bible. It's a breath of fresh air in these fundamentalist times. After you complete the book, how you see Christianity will change. Life will never be the same. If you are one of the thousands of pew warmers who have left the church over the last decade or two, that's 2 million people a year now, Michael, just in the US alone. You left for good reasons, according to Williams. In the author's view, Christianity serves up a destructive double message, schizophrenic to the core. You are under grace since Christ, but you are still a damned sinner. Williams challenges a number of Christian beliefs, such as this one. He also challenges Christian belief itself, maintaining that it has lost its ability to create wonder and has become performance-based and entirely self-righteous do-goodism. In Williams' view, Christians have it all wrong. We don't have to work harder to believe in God, since it is God who believes in us. Citing Jesus' message to the disciples about faith, if you have the faith of a mustard seed, Michael interprets it very differently. The passage is sarcasm. No one needs more belief other than to believe God believes in them. Christ is mocking the Pharisees' demand that followers believe more to change their circumstances. The true gospel that Williams celebrates in his book is about God's opinion of us. You are my son with whom I am well pleased. Our identity is fused with God's opinion of us, not what church leaders demand we do. It is our knowledge of our identity in Christ that is the good news, not empty church rituals, codes, and beliefs. The reason behind such errors in understanding and interpretation, according to Williams, is control. By demanding churchgoers increase in faith, failure is then built in. No one can be perfect. It's like chasing the proverbial carrot that you can never reach. However, such dynamics serve church leaders, since guilt is a handy tool for maintaining control. Sin is another area where the church fails to supply a healthy understanding for Christians. In Williams' view, since Christ, we no longer need to repent for sin. It is finished. It's done for us. We are under grace. Confession of sin is an insult to God's grace, he claims. Grace is not about morals. It's about removing, not adding, guilt, and removing the judgment of others. Morality is taught just like any other skill. Christ is an inspiration. His resistance of the devil in the desert, a template for mankind. For it was Christ's identity that was under attack. If you are, the devil said. We are challenged, like Christ, every day to surrender our identity to God's opinion of us. Not circumstances, nor temptations, or our fellow man. The current gospel is about change, goodness, righteousness. The true gospel is about change done to us. We do not work at it. Working at being good only produces self-righteousness, people following rules, trying to be perfect and unavoidably failing, acting good in hypocrisy, an exhausting and debilitating mental and physical struggle, schizophrenic to the core. Williams assumes those who truly seek the gospel in their hearts seek their identity in God. The good news is that we are free from the old wine. Brackets, self-righteousness, brackets. New wine cannot be put in old wineskins. It can only be put in new wineskins, brackets, Jesus. The new wine is the gospel of Christ, and the new wineskins are us. We are under grace, a new creation, free to choose our destiny. We are also free to follow a destructive or constructive life. We can abuse our grace or not. The important message of Williams is that old wine does not serve the new creation / wineskins. The new creation serves Christ. We control our destiny. We are not God's robots or tools of the church. We are benefactors of grace because of Christ. This book is a fantastic read, but I warn you, some pages you will have to read twice. Some of the understanding is so fantastic, it will take some time to accept and digest the material, especially if you are coming from a background of legalistic self-righteousness. I spent many years trying to be a better Christian by following all of the precepts of the church. It's an impossible task. In closing, I would recommend Williams' gospel. It's a Christ gospel, and in my opinion, the best antidote for those caught in the performance trap of wondering how much harder they will have to work to be right. Now, we got this from Goodreads.com. So go to Goodreads.com, look up one, the Gospel According to Mike, and you'll find this. But this is, I mean, unsolicited, you could not get a better book review, could you, Mike?
Well, and it's the thing that touches me is that the whole reason for writing the book, the review is wonderful, but the fact that the effort was put into this to where that people would understand within the contents of these pages, we now know for sure it's there. I can think it's there. You can think it's there. Jeff can think it's there. All of the gospel revolutionaries can think it's there. But is it there for people who've never heard it before? And this, along with other responses that we've got, not necessarily book reviews, but the book contains what we want people to hear, because he certainly has quoted it all back to us, that's for sure. And I think it's wonderful that he encouraged people that certain pages you will have to read through twice, because these are concepts that run crossways of any Christian principles whatsoever as far as their definition of what the gospel is or isn't.
Now, Mike, this week I got an email from, I think we both did, from Vic DeBrennan, executive producer.
Yes.
Gospel Revolution. We got a couple of this man, I think he's a troublemaker, frankly.
You just now figured that out.
No, I've thought this for a while. I just now had the guts to say it out loud. No, he wrote us an email, and he gave us a few quotes out of the Atheist Bible, and one of them was the quote that I had at the top of the show.
I noticed that.
And I'm going to go through them, and because whoever wrote this has not given, they've not claimed who said what. So I'm just going to go through, and I'm just going to make sure that we give acknowledgement to the original authors. But what we said at the top of the show still stands. Heresy is only another word for freedom of thought. That's a new one for me, and I love it. You got a call?
Oh, yeah, it's Michael Blanche. Hold on one second.
Tell him if he doesn't ring me, he doesn't count.
Hey, Michael.
Michael, hi.
Can I call you back in just a bit? We're just finishing up the PowerCast.
Tell him what I said.
And Barris is saying something mean to you, but I'm not going to repeat it. All right, I'll talk to you in a bit. Bye.
That's fun. Now, the second thing executive producer Victor Brennan sent us this week was a flurry of emails between you and him, and I know you want to cover this. Okay, from Victor Brennan to Michael Williams. Hello, Mike. Hope you're keeping well. Just working on the Book of Galatians, and I'm at the part. I mean, when did you release this Book of Galatians? It was about 4 years
ago. Oh, I know. And it's his 100th time through it, so.
Okay, so I hope you're keeping well. Just working on the Book of Galatians. I'm at the part where you speak of the pearl of great price. Where is that in the Book of Galatians, Michael? Are you reading from a different Bible? Hold up. Question.
That's not what he said.
I'm reading his email.
No, I was teaching on the Book of Galatians and making reference to the pearl of great price, not that it was in the Book of Galatians.
Question. Why would a pearl be associated with a field?
Excellent question, isn't it?
It is. And Victor Brennan, out of my largesse, out of my superlative understanding and wisdom, I would like to say that you just need to read more. Nothing like that to put someone off. Why would a pearl be associated with a field? The person supposedly bought the whole field, brackets, the world, brackets, to be sure to obtain the pearl of great price. Would a pearl not be associated with water / ocean, not land? Just seems odd to me. Love you. Now, here he is. He's a little troublemaker, this Victor Brennan. He puts that in your face and then says, love you.
Uh-huh. And he does.
At the end of the letter, he says, actually, you said ground, not field, in your tea. I mean, like, what's that supposed to do? Is that supposed to soften the blow, is it, Victor Brennan? So then you wrote back.
Yes.
Read verse 44, 45, 46. It is two different parables. I never noticed before treasure was found in a field. No mention of a field in the pearl parable.
I couldn't believe that. It's like, you know, here I'm all the time telling people to read in context, and bam, what happens? Victor Brennan catches me not quoting something in context. Doesn't even say that.
Bloody troublemaker. That's all he is, a bloody troublemaker. And now, there's more to this. So you fess up and you say, no mention of a field in the pearl parable. I just always quoted it incorrectly. Now, it was Jeff Robertson who first opened my eyes to this too. Then Victor Brennan writes, maybe the field included the ocean. If field is a metaphor for the world.
He's trying to make me be right, isn't he?
I'm telling you, yeah.
He's trying really hard to let me be right. I appreciate that, Vic. Because people around here don't do that, that's for sure.
So I'm just finishing transcribing chapter 2 of your teaching on Galatians. Start chapter 3 tomorrow. What's all the best? Oh, all the best. Yes, yes. I'm just going to tear you a new one, but all the best. Vic, what do you mean he's transcribing?
Well, that's what he's doing. He gets all of this down where he can read it, and I think he passes it out a lot to other people too. So, but you'd have to ask Vic for sure.
So he's just not a revolutionary. He's an activist revolutionary.
Activist revolutionary. He is an AGR.
An AGR. Dang. And an EP, an executive producer.
Exactly. And a CPA.
And not to mention a CPA for the... Okay. He's sounding more and more like Karl Marx to me, if you ask me, but that's just my opinion. The word pearl... Oh, here is something you wrote to him. Vic, I noticed you didn't say dear Vic, and I don't blame you. You said Vic. The word pearl does indeed mean exactly that in the Greek. I suppose a pearl, once extracted from an oyster shell, could be found anywhere. Oh, geez, you're a slippery one. You really are.
I know.
Good question. I don't know. Love you, Michael.
Now, see, I want you to get the connection with what I said earlier. I don't know is the way I got here. Now, here you have this in impeccable demonstration, how that I don't know leads to knowing.
So you emailed me this interchange,
mm-hmm.
and told me you wanted to explore it on the show.
Yeah, it was just the fact that there is one about a man purchasing a field and found a treasure, not a pearl. And the merchant is the one who found the pearl.
This week is the first week of our pledge drive. Every new donor will get a pharisectomy certificate stating that their inner Pharisee has been removed with surgical precision by the master and teacher himself, Mike Williams. And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Don't forget to visit www.thetruegospel.net and order your copy of Redemption, A Declaration for All, Not a Choice for a Few. One of the best study guides ever written to destroy forever any illusions that there is any degree of separation between God and man. If you want the quickest route between where you are now and being ravished by the oceans of grace, washing all traces of self-doubt away, read this. $1 a week is nothing, I mean nothing, but here at the Gospel Revolution, it can make all the difference for somebody just like you, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. We run a value for value model here. If you feel that you've received real value from this PowerCast, then I'm asking you to seriously consider donating $1 a week or $1 a day. Why don't you call our office on area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey Robertson about what you can do, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. You want to leave a message for Mike or a question for him to answer, dial area code 234-564-0971 and leave a voicemail. You can find us on Facebook at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, all the gospel all the time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. And now it's good night from myself, Paris Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Nashville, Tennessee.
And good night from Michael Williams right here in Houston, Texas, saying we will see you next time.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Better.